Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 579. It's the 7th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Tim McCarthy, non-executive chairman of IMI Pharma. He discusses the invitation from the Mauritian government to open an additional site to enroll up to 30 lupus patients as part of their phase 3 study there. Also on the podcast, small cap commentator Doc Holliday talks about African Potash, Sigma Rock and Life Science Development Limited. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Renew Holdings. I also have the top 5 most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And I've got to say, there's two companies in there. There's four companies in there that are performing very well. In fact, two that have appeared in this list several times over the last few days, and they're just powering ahead. It's almost like saying, you know, if you see two companies like that, any company that appears in this top five regularly, just put it on your watch list. Do some research on it, all right? Also, on the podcast, the most liked RNS and disliked RNS in the last 24 hours. Plus, today's suggested one for your watch list has been submitted by James, and it's Union Jack Oil. Now, I had David Bramwell, executive chairman, on yesterday. I just go through these submissions chronologically, so it's a bit of a coincidence, but I think it's a nice little summary, really. So we'll cover that in a bit and why James thinks you should put UJO on your watch list in a few minutes.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim McCarthy, non-executive chairman of IMI Pharma. That's ticker IMM. Tim, thanks for coming back on.
No problem, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
Now, yeah, you too. Now, it's a nice bit of news out today, and I don't know if it's unexpected, but we'll go through that in a bit. For the people who are not aware of what you do at IMI Pharma, can you tell us all about the business, please, Tim?
Yes, of course. IMI Pharma is an AIM-listed company. We are a drug development company, and we're mostly known for our lead drug, which was the subject of the RNS announcements this morning. And that is a drug called Lupusor for the treatment of a condition, an autoimmune condition called lupus. This is a condition which affects up to 5 million people worldwide, mostly women and non-Caucasian women. And it's a condition which, unfortunately for patients, is not very well treated at all. So there is a crying need for a new treatment for all of these patients, and that is what we are developing. The drug is in the last stage of clinical development, what we call phase 3. We are recruiting 200 patients in this study. It's actively recruiting now and has been for the last 6 months, and we expect to complete recruitment this year and deliver the results before the end of next year.
Yeah, and just to point out, it's been granted fast-track status by the US FDA, hasn't it?
It has, and this drug and the whole program has got quite a lot of what I would call external validations on it, and probably one of the most significant is the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, who are the regulator in the United States, and they have agreed the phase 3 clinical study protocol with us, but what they've also given us in addition is what's called an SPA, a special protocol assessment, which means that they are saying that if we deliver the clinical results at the end of the study, then they will approve this drug based on those results. And that's quite different from the normal process where you would agree, you have to agree with the regulator, the protocol and permission to start a study, but they wouldn't guarantee that at the end of the study that they would approve it. They're very often known to have changed their mind by the time you get the results of a study, and then you have to go back and run another study or a supplementary study. So the fact that they've given this SPA, which they don't give out very often, so let me emphasise that, is a great external validation from the FDA that the clinical data that we've produced so far in clinical studies is robust, and the safety profile, which is just as important, is very benign, i.e. we don't see any side effects.
Yeah, okay. And nice bullish release today. So you've had... in fact, take us through it. So you opened an additional site in Mauritius. But what I like about this is that you were requested by the government to do this, which is good, isn't it?
It's excellent. And you mentioned it being unexpected at the beginning of this interview. And it's unexpected from our perspective, because when we started out on the study, we told everybody that we were recruiting patients across the US and Europe. and fully expected to get all the patients, the 200 patients from there. And that hasn't changed. It's just that the inventor of Lupusor, a lady called Professor Silva Muller, was invited to Mauritius by the Mauritian government recently in the summer, because they have a high incidence, in proportion to their population, a high incidence of lupus sufferers in Mauritius. And they had heard about the study. They invited Professor Muller to come over and discuss the drug, the study, the findings that she has to date. And on the specific request of the president of Mauritius, we were asked as a company whether we would consider including Mauritius and their patients within the study. We're delighted to, for two reasons. One, it just accelerates, if anything, the recruitment rates that we get, but also to help out, if you like, in the situation in Mauritius and give them some hope for the future of this drug, which I think is just as important. But yes, it was unexpected from that point of view, but a nice unexpectation, if I can put it that way. And so we're delighted to announce it today, yes.
Yeah, well, it just proves almost, doesn't it, you know, how urgent this is to, you know, the Mauritius government. If they're at their level, you know, actually inviting you, I mean, there couldn't be a higher validation, really.
They couldn't, and it just illustrates, you know, what I've said before, and that is that there is no effective treatment out there for lupus sufferers. There is one other approved drug, which is from GlaxoSmithKline, called Benlysta. It's been in the market about 4 or 5 years. It does give some relief to patients, but not as much as we believe Lupusor will, and we have some comparative data amongst the two drugs. And you know, unfortunately, it does have a published list of side effects. Our clinical studies to date have shown absolutely no side effects of Lupusor at all. So I think with that profile and the lack of suitable treatments out there currently with the same profile that we're looking at with Lupusor, that's why the Mauritian government was so excited about it and the prospects, and that's why they have invited us to include them in the study.
Yeah, well, people listening to this may find it hard to put some figures around this, but I've just read a note here about, you know, like GSK's Benlysta. And like you said, you know, it's the nearest sort of comparative we have, really. But the charge is $35,000 per patient per year. And just looking at Mauritius alone, they've got a population of 1.2 million. Like you said, they've got 3,000 current lupus patients. So even if you treated all those just in Mauritius alone, that's $105 million of revenue, you know, and that's just in one small country, isn't it, you know?
Correct. And our estimates that there are about 5 million patients across the world.
Wow.
If you concentrate that in what I would call the G7 countries, which in pharmaceutical terms are probably the more accessible patients you can get to on a commercial basis, there's still 1.5 million. Now, when we talk about the commercial potential for Lupusor, we call it a blockbuster drug. And a blockbuster drug in pharmaceutical terms is anything selling more than $1 billion a year. So just do the simple maths. Now, we wouldn't expect ourselves or our marketing partner to sell as high as $35,000 per patient. We believe the advantages we have in cost of goods, the ease of manufacture and everything else that we have with Lupusor, we could easily sell this at $20,000 per patient. Now, it's still a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But it's almost half what Benlysta is being sold at. And if you do the simple maths, every 50,000 patients is $1 billion of revenue. So you just concentrate on the 1.5 million, what I would call easily accessible patients, and you can see how this can be a multi-billion-dollar drug very easily with the profile that we expect it to have, i.e. very effective with no side effect profile.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm just, while you're talking there, I'm trying to listen, but I've also got my calculator out on my computer.
And, it's too many
noughts on it, I'm afraid. Exactly. I've just got, I literally count the noughts here. So I've done a million and a half times 20, and I got 30 billion, is it? Something like that? Yeah, so it's a ridiculous amount. So, and almost underlining this, we've got two broker notes out today. Dr. Mike Mitchell of Panmure Gordon reiterated a buy recommendation at £1. That's a lower estimate. Northland Capital Partners buy recommendation target 171. So even if you take the average of that, you are now at 35.5 pence this morning. So you can see the potential there, isn't there? And you must be. So timeline wise, where are we at now with lupus?
So where we are actively in the recruitment phase for the 200 patients, and the guidance we've given is that we will have that recruitment completed this year. And obviously the extra input from Mauritius just only helps that, really, in terms of those recruitment lines. And then each patient in the study is dosed for 1 year. So in order to think about future timelines, you have to think about the last patient being recruited and count 12 months from there. So that will clearly be before the end of 2017. And then we're looking to publish the headline results of this study before the end of 2017.
Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, if what we've talked about already isn't enough to convince people to hit the follow button on your page on Vox Markets, Tim, could you give us three sort of bullet-pointed summary as to why they should hit that follow button there?
Yes, well, in summary, we have a quite unique treatment for lupus, which we also own 100% of the rights, which I didn't mention before, so that means all the upside is still with us. The potential news flow, and I think this is important for your listeners, the potential news flow over this year and next year will be very strong as we keep updating the market. And that's obviously important to keep the market informed of what we're doing. And just to reiterate what you said about the analysts, who are all external analysts with their own view on it, two reiterated their buy recommendations today, Mike Mitchell at Panmure Gordon at £1 and Vadim Alexandre at Northland at 171. I could give you about 10 other points, Justin, but you've asked me for three, so I hope that's enough.
No, that's fine. And just even looking on a technical point of view here, we saw a bit of a spike up at the 48 pence, you know, early the year. It's dropped back a bit, so it's at reasonable levels. And do you know what? I like a chart. I can see previous spikes are at around, you know, just over 30 pence. So we hit a support level there, it looks like. And now on this news, it's starting to turn the corner. And so it's looking nice on the chart. Fundamentally, it looks quite good. So I just think, you know, people, if you're listening, if you do hit the follow button, you will get RNSs straight from ImmuPharma whenever they release them. Tim, thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully speak again soon.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is small cap authority Doc Holliday. You're right, Doc.
Morning, Justin. How are you today?
I'm all right, yes. And looking at some stocks rising, and I see Prospect Oil and Gas. I know we both hold a bit of that, doing quite well today. But one of the companies that you mentioned to me before, when I got in before, and I bagged on it, and then I haven't looked back, but I bought it once since and got back out quickly, is African Potash. And to me, there's no chance of me ever getting in there again now. What's your thoughts on African Potash?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always going to be a hard sell, I think, African Potash, given the fact that the subject now to a few sort of complaints, queries, concerns, etc., etc. I don't particularly want to focus too much on that. The company, when Chris Cleverly was appointed, presented a great strategy on what their intention was. They've yet to implement any of that. The share price built up quite dramatically on the anticipation, speculation of what the company would deliver as a fertilizer trading business across Africa. And obviously Chris has got a great relationship with one of the richest, if not the richest guy on the continent, Oswald Boateng. So all of these things seem to stack up at that time. The share sort of price goes from 0.35p up to about 3.5p, and naturally it's presented lots and lots of people with lots of opportunity to make dramatic amounts of cash. The downside is the delivery has been poor. There's been suggestion that the company have made comments regarding the business, both publicly in RNS and privately in conversations, that the business were in a much stronger position than they appear to be in today. As I say, that's the sort of quick overview of where the company is, the rise and fall, the grand old Duke of York, all the way up, all the way back down again. And we're now trading at this sort of 0.25p area. I've obviously noted that there's been a big increase in volume. There's been commentary and a narrative in the markets that there's been a placement. I've been on the phone mostly yesterday trying to find anybody that was offered this placement. It was a bridge loan, and this is the misconception. I don't know anybody that had any type of access or knows of anybody who's had access to it. And towards the end of the day, one of the sources that I have, it informs me that the £500,000 bridge loan was done with Cantors. Now, if you look at the order book on level two, you'll see that Cantors appear to be steering the ship at the moment. They've been a bane in the markets to many, many small cap companies. I've had quite a few entertaining encounters with Cantors over the last few months, where once the brakes come off, things react quite dramatically. This, just to caveat it, Justin, and before I go any further, is probably similar to sort of jumping behind the wheel of a Formula One car whilst having drunken a bottle of vodka. The risk and the chance of a car crash are most definitely there. You shouldn't be considering African potash as a buy opportunity or a trade if you're averse to risk. However, the fact that Cantors allegedly has supplied the company with cash for this bridging loan, and given the fact that 300 million shares or more have traded since the 1st of the September, equate that to, you know, approximately 15 to 20% of the company with a market cap of a couple of million quid or more. You've had £300,000 or £400,000 worth of stock go into that quite quickly. And I don't believe that's just Johnny Retail getting a little bit excited that there could be a trade opportunity. The fact that Cantors allegedly have stuck up the money for the bridging loan may suggest that they had taken a net position or potentially had some type of a instrument in place which is that's helped them as the share price has declined quite rapidly. All of these are ifs and buts. We have no guarantee and confirmation of any of this. It's something that's caught my attention mainly because of the volume. Let's wait and see. There's something interesting going on. There's definitely a lot of skeletons in the closet. And I'm, for one, not suggesting that this is a long-term play for any stretch, but I think there's something brewing in the background, and that sort of money doesn't start sloshing about unless there's good reason. Will the company go and raise cash? It's going to be a real possibility, given the fact that all of these AIM companies, near enough, are raising cash every half year to a year. Is the company in the doldrums? Yes. Has there been some questionable announcements made? Yes. But at some point, this has got to be priced in. I guess the only thing that's not priced in is the company suspending and going bust tomorrow. That would be devastating, and that would be the kind of killer blow. There's nothing else left, in my opinion. And from experience, there's generally some buoyancy once these things hit a floor.
Yeah, it seems like Chris Cleverly now has been promising some kind of revenue for a while, and it's just not forthcoming, is it? You know, it's not happening. And yet again, in the last release, he said that. He says, hopefully this will take us towards revenue generation. I thought, yeah, I've heard that before somewhere. But,
Justin, it's one of these things, isn't it? If you cry wolf too many times, nobody believes it. When it happens, I mean, look, like I say, I'm not suggesting that that Chris is a saint here. And I'm not too fussed in what's going on with that side of things now, because the disappointment is so much so that, you know, trying to heal the wound is almost impossible. I think what I'm focused on is that this company has got a £2 million valuation, was valued at sort of 25 to 30 million quid this time last year or not too long ago. And there's obviously, there's something being worked in the background. There are no guarantees. I'm not subscribing and buying into this whole, revenue generation and things are going to be all lovely and fluffy and nice. I'm just simply pointing out a few facts that having done some due diligence on that bridge loan, on who's taken and provided that cover for that loan, and the types of, things that have been going on since the start of the month, I've come up with these findings. Certainly not an endorsement to buy shares, certainly not advising people to sell shares on this one, just sort of giving some insight as to what's going on. Clearly, there's an interest there.
On the podcast yesterday, I had Max from SigmaRoc. There's a lot of interest in SigmaRoc, and in the top five most followed this today. Do you have any opinion on it? Do you know much about SigmaRoc, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know a great deal about SigmaRoc other than the fact that the shell that these guys have used, I think there was a 77% dilution. The vehicle was valued at very little, and that these guys have got a strategy and some cash, and that they were looking to deploy that into the junior market. I kind of figured when I looked at this initially that I think on their prospectus that said something along the lines that they were looking to invest in, was it the building industry or the aggregate industry, you know, concrete or something, some kind of construction industry. At that point in time, I think Brexit had just happened. A lot of house builders were taking a pummeling. I know you were in, was it Taylor Wimpey or one of those kind
Persimmon,
of
yeah, Persimmon, yeah.
Persimmon, that's right. So there was obviously, lots of volatility, should we say, at that time. And whilst that doesn't always affect these junior companies, it was something that I felt a bit adverse to. Having said that, they've got to market, they've raised a bit of cash, and they've caught the attention of the market tie at this junior level. I don't have any great view on it other than to say that, momentum's 8/10 of the law in the junior markets and on AIM. If you've got that, you've got liquidity. With that, it gives you opportunity. And I think this company now is not one that's going to be forgotten quickly. If they can come out and they can continue to steer things in the right direction, engage and harness the retail world, because it is mainly, you know, Johnny Retail that are going to stick cash into these startup businesses. If they can build that relationship up and deliver, which is what we know to be the pertinent and most prominent thing we need to have as an investor in these early stage businesses, if they can do all of those things, I'm sure SigmaRoc's got a bright future ahead of it.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's almost like there's a lot of hope built into this company because they're being compared with, the similar kind of strategy as Breedon, which have a £1 billion market cap, build and acquire companies. You realise the best time to get into penny stocks is before any of the realities kick in, when there's always just hope out there, when there's just hope of this strategy. But Max came on the podcast yesterday, very well presented, I thought, his strategy, and a clever, sharp-sounding guy. But, of course, I had some investors submitted questions who asked some questions like, how are you going to raise money? And when you start getting to the realities of it, and almost the dream, almost diffuses a little bit, you see the harshness of what's needed. The share price came back a bit because it's doubled since IPO on the 23rd of August. So, you think that's a heck of a strong rise. The market cap had gone from like 700,000 to 1.4 million. And then all of a sudden, the hardest part is when these small caps start making revenue and they start missing revenue, that's when the hard part comes. When they're just based on hope and dreams, they fly, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing with where you get your comparatives, it's a little bit like opening a cake shop and then likening yourself to Mr. Kipling. I mean, the truth of it is the two just don't go together, but naturally people always want to think big. If you go back to the Mark Twain statement of a mine is a hole in the ground with a lion stood next to it, or is it Warren Buffett who said, the rump of the gains on these types of investments are made right at the early stage and before a single resource has been delivered to market. That might have actually been Benjamin Gritton. It was one of these kind of famous quotes anyway, but I think the analogy is simply this, that much of the speculation and anticipation and all the rest of it, that creates and whips up a storm within the market, and that's where a lot of the value comes from. You're always going to be likened to Mr. Kipling if you've opened a little cake shop. Nobody's ever going to turn around and say, well, 9 out of 10 cake shops go bust. It doesn't suit the agenda and it doesn't suit people's purpose. What we got to look at is there momentum there? Yes. Is there a level of liquidity building up? Yes. And with that, it gives that company an opportunity. So if it's liquid, gives them an opportunity to go back to the market and say, okay, well, we raised some money with a 700 or £1 million valuation, and now we want to raise a little bit more money with a £2 million valuation, and we intend then to use that over the next sort of 6 to 12 months, and hopefully we can continue to build this business incrementally, raising cash as we rise. That's what they all hope to do. You know, you can never rule out a secondary placing, not when you've had one as early as this. But, you know, it's all about where will it be? Where can it go? It's in the limelight. People like it. The share price is rising. As long as you're sort of box clever, you adopt a robust set of principles where you're sort of taking a view that you'll scale in and not just go and plow all your cash in at a certain point. You know, you talk about it a lot, and I think you've got the right outlook, mate. So I kind of figure that as long as people are being responsible with what they're doing, there is a great deal of opportunity with SigmaRoc and many, many others of these sort of junior startup companies.
No, I agree. SigmaRoc, they've got a good team there. And, you know, they have a strategy and they see an opportunity. And I think, you know, if it goes according to plan, who knows where it can end up. Talking about, hope and a bit of dreams here. We got Life from where Jim Mellon came on the podcast last week. And, of course, he can't say too much about this because at the moment, they're going through doing work on it. But he did say, I mean, what did you think of the comments he said on Life?
Well, you know, there's one sort of big difference, isn't there, when you talk about hope? I mean, you know, this is a guy that dreamed a dream that, you know, has came true in many respects. If you follow the sort of the Times Rich list and things like that, you know, old Jim, I think in his comments to you, was sort of suggesting that his biggest battle now was trying to find ways not to lose the money, because I think with many of these people, and you look at Philip Green and the likes, you can make, you know, billions of pounds and you can potentially lose it as it can go down the plug hole quite quickly. And I think there's a level of arrogance out there with very, very wealthy people. And I think that bodes quite badly. So to hear Jim talk about, you know, that he's looking to find ways to insulate himself against loss, I think that's quite a responsible outlook. He's quite clearly aware of the timelines for that company to announce something. I wouldn't think they'd let it go to the wire. I think we're sort of heading now into the sort of second week of September, and I think that's going to start to be, you would hope that this is an area now where Life will start to wake up. Denimake is, from what I heard, quite a savvy, sometimes ruthless person in the market. Jim Mellon, extremely successful. I know there's certain individuals out there say he sounds, you know, he likes the sound of his own voice. Personally, I thought he did a great job. I thought it was really intriguing. I think the guy's got a very balanced outlook, and I think he'd got, he's cuffed by the markets really on what he can say about Life. But it's a company with just over £1 million market cap. I think they'd got $1.35 million at the last announcement, so, you know, roughly £1 million in the bank. And you've got these sort of heavy hitters sitting on the board of directors and involved with the business. You know, it is what it is. I guess it's all down to the fact if you can speculate and you can dream the dream, the same as Jim has and many others, you may want to take a punt. But it's early stage, and it's all going to be down to momentum, and it's all going to be down to, whether people subscribe to the vision that perhaps these guys have got. I do. Mm-hmm. I like it. I think it's got a lot of opportunity. I think if the shares were trading at a sort of 8, 10, 12p, I wouldn't be surprised, because it would still only give it a market cap of, I think, about 3, 4, 5 million quid. So on that basis, these things can get there on very little, and I'm prepared to speculate and take a punt based on that. But again, you wouldn't go sticking the ranch on it. You just, you know, you've got to take a responsible sort of outlook, haven't you?
Yeah, do you know what? Like I said, it's a punt, and I like the way Jim just sat there almost objectively, you know, right in the middle of the bull and bear fence, you know, and you can, you know, the comments that I highlighted were, we are quite aware a deadline is coming up in October. Also, he said the board are working hard and he said determined to do the best for shareholders. So you can take from that what you want. You know, there's nothing positive there. Nothing. You know, they're aware of it. So it's like I said, it's a educated punt, really, isn't it? You know.
Absolutely. I think, the markets at this point, and particularly if you've got a material event to announce, and you would imagine that a company that they've been working on for this amount of time and the amount of, aspects and opportunities that must be presented to Burnbrae, Jim's private company, on a daily, weekly and monthly basis, I'd be very, very surprised if there wasn't something that these guys are looking at. And if there is any type of material news to be released in the near term, then, Jim would be a fool to say anything other than the comments that he shared with you. But what he has done, I think, inadvertently in those comments is he's recognised both to you and hopefully he shared it with the wider audience that the company are aware of investor interest, and they're also, pointing and highlighting that we're doing everything we can and we're working to get some sort of a deal which will work. There can't be any guarantees. Naturally, there's the usual caveat. There can't be any guarantees. You'll be informed in due course. That's something that we've got to get used to as investors in the market. We can't know everything. But as you quite rightly point out, we've got to make a educated guess, or we've got to look at it on a binary basis.
Yeah, yeah. Marvellous, Doc. Thanks very much. Speak soon, fella.
See you, mate. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're all right, Al?
I'm good, Jus. Yeah, very good, thanks. Nice sunny day down here, so it looks like normal service on the heat front has been resumed.
Oh, excellent stuff. And do you know what? I'm loving it. My son's just gone back to school, and my other son's in preschool, so it's nice, quiet around the house. Having this for like 8 weeks, we haven't had this for. It's nice. But what do you think of the markets here? I mean, where are we at the moment with the FTSE today? Is it looking good? Is it stalling? Is it up by? It's flat, isn't it, pretty much?
It's pretty flat, but what I'm encouraged by, and I mentioned this on Tip TV yesterday, what I'm encouraged by is the strong performance from the UK economy. I mean, we've had the construction PMI numbers out, we've had services, and industrial production this morning was minus 2%. It's positive 0.1%, and industrial production year on year, the estimate was 1.9%. It's 2.1%. So, Brexit has been so far been a very good thing for the UK economy. And with that in mind, I think that, it's a good time now to look at stocks that do have a UK focus and are sort of focused on this sort of growth that the UK is currently delivering. In contrast, I might say, to its European counterparts.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I just looked at the UK FTSE chart here, and I'm calling this a big sell-off. We're going to have a big sell-off right now. I believe that. And just looking at the chart, just at one glance, we've had a higher low. The RSI is coming down. The MACD is rolling over. Yeah. I think we're in for a bit of a sell-off next 2 weeks. We haven't had one, have we? We haven't had one apart from Brexit, which was like it wasn't a sell-off. It was a dip and a bounce, almost a V-shaped recovery there, which we know it doesn't exist pretty much, but I think we are due for sell-off on the FTSE, definitely.
Well, I think we're going to see caution. If these sort of numbers keep on sort of hitting our screens, so and beating estimates, beating expectations, we'll probably, rather than sell off, see enter a period of consolidation. All of the analysts are saying, all of the market pundits are saying that longer term we're going to see some problems emerging from Brexit. But I think the expectation was that would have happened by now, and clearly the UK economy is in great shape despite the comments of Barack Obama and despite all the other doomsayers out there.
Yeah, but do you know what? The thing is, we haven't Brexited. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
I mean, I know,
you know,
yeah,
we are still in this, you know, we haven't even, you know, invoked Article 50 yet. So we aren't, nothing's changed materially apart from sentiment, pretty much. And I think there's a long lag factor there. So I think we've had a sort of relief rally, thinking, well, we've had a bit of good sort of numbers out, figures out from the services PMI and all that, the construction PMI. Ignore all that. Chart, we're in for sell-off. Right, anyway.
Yeah, okay, all right.
That's my take on it. So,
consolidation, you say sell-off. Okay.
Yeah. Well, this time next week, we'll see, Al, who's right or wrong. And we'll probably both be wrong and probably go up. And yeah. All right, what is stock you looking at, Al?
Well, following on from my comments about the UK economy, I'm looking today at a company which is focused wholly on the UK. Think of it, if you will, as a mini Balfour Beatty without international overseas operations. It's a company called Renew Holdings, RNWH is the epicode. Currently got a market cap of about 220 million. Shares have been as high as £4.20. They've dipped under £3 and it's currently trading at around £3.65. Now, we're in the run-up to a trading update and full-year numbers, the trading update will be early October and the full-year will be in November. But going back to the interims in May, the company announced pre-tax profits, adjusted pre-tax profits are up 9% at 10 million, revenues up 5% at 265 million. They hiked the dividends, there's just under 2% yield. They hiked the dividend, interim dividend, by 18% on the back of an order book that was up 9%. So the great thing about Renew Holdings is it's an engineering company, so it's got long-term contracts. It works in the nuclear industry. It has a contract with Sellafield to remove radioactive sludge, amongst other things, which must be a charming task.
Yes, wow. Well, sludge on its own is not good, but when you've got radioactive sludge, that's a whole new combination of worry.
It must be a pretty horrible thing to have to deal with, yeah. So they're in energy, they're in building, they've got contracts with Network Rail. They also have plots of land, and they're in the process of selling those plots of land. A year ago, the company had debts of 14 million. It's reduced those debts down to 4.2 million. And the CEO was very bullish about the outcome for the year. He said the company are aiming for a 4.5% operating margin for the year ending September 2017. And there's very good visibility with the stock. So if you believe in the UK recovery, if you believe in growth in the UK, regardless of that, Renew Holdings has done pretty well over the past few years. And we did talk about this, I believe, going back a year and a half, 2 years ago. It's a company, it's a UK company. They're based in Leeds, so you can go and look at them, see what they do. But I just like this company as an opportunity to invest into the UK. It's got a dividend yield. The profits are growing. Revenues are growing. What's not to like?
Yes, I mean, you know, just looking through the interims there, a strong performance there.
Yeah.
And, so was it that in June they last dipped? Yeah, they last dipped on the Brexit thing, didn't they? Down to like £3, up to £3.70 at the moment, pretty much. So it's almost that was an opportunity, wasn't it? When we look back on it, when everyone starts to worry, you realise that was an opportunity there. And I'm glad I sort of seized upon it a little bit. I did jump into Persimmon and latterly into EasyJet. And they've both been doing, you know, performed well since. We'll see if it's, you know, can be sustained, you know. But, okay, one for the watch list. Renew, RNWH. Marvellous stuff. Al, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jess.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website the last 24 hours. They are at five, Doc chatting about them, African Potash. At four, up hugely yesterday, over 200%, Mobile Streams, MOS. At three, it's there again, the ever popular, a phenomenal rise in the share price, CloudTag. It's been the top five, I don't know how many times in the last week or so. At two, again, another one, really surging share price, and it's been in this watch list, and that's why, you know, these watches, the top five, are really telling. It's a huge measure of sentiment. I can't get this across to you enough. If you're not paying attention to this, please do. Scan this watch list every day and look for one that appears in it. That is the company the people are following. And I got to say, if you follow a stock, there's only one reason why you follow a stock, because you're interested in maybe an investment, you know? So that's the way it works. It's Proxharma, number two. And at number one, on the podcast yesterday, I talked with Doc. And, you know, the company, very sharp, they're switched on. They have a strategy. They've seen opportunity. And they've got a good team. It's SigmaRoc, SRC, the most followed company on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. All right, it's time for the most liked and disliked RNS on the Vox Markets site. And what else it was? So Starcom, STAR, was the most liked RNS. Having said that, I don't know why, because the share price is down by a bit of a chunk today, about 15%, I think. But obviously, quite a few fans there quite like that. They see the potential in that RNS. And the most disliked RNS last 24 hours, oddly, interim results from Forbidden Technologies, FBT. And they're down last two trading days. Okay, today's suggested one for your watch list has been submitted by James, Mr. Bezer, on Twitter. And that company is Union Jack Oil. I had David Bramall, executive chairman, on the podcast yesterday. What does the company do? Oil and gas exploration, soon-to-be producer. SP Angel have predictions of between 0.81 and 6.81. Really? Wow. How many shares does the company have an issue? 2.8 billion. What's the current price of market cap? It's 4.83 million with £2 million in the bank. Yeah. Mark Cameron, what's the share price? So let me just check the share price. I know it's up again today. So obviously people liked what they heard in the podcast yesterday. Up by 8% today. Wow. Market cap is now 5.78. So it's gone up a bit there. I'll adjust that on the submission. So it is at 5 million market cap just over. And 0.2 pence is the share price. What revenue and profit loss did the company generate? For 6 months ended 30th of June, revenue £8,000, loss for the period £250,000. How much cash and debt does the company have? For 6 months ended 30th of June, cash £2.2 million in cash. Their net assets £3.9 million, no debt, and half its market cap is in cash in the bank. Well, it's a little bit less than that now because the share price has gone up, but that's good. There's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, go into the production at Wrestle North Lincolnshire. Number two, Kedlington flow test due any time. Or Keddington, sorry, not Kedlington. And number three, they will be drilling smack bang in the middle of Horse Hill in the Weald Basin. So check that out. It's UJOI. And, you know, I'll put the link actually to yesterday's podcast here, but you'll see it on the blog page there of Vox Markets. It's voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. If you want to listen to that. And I think David Bramall comes off quite well. You know, very confident guy. Like I said, they have care. They're very careful on their spending. And very steady build and acquire process, which is seems to be working out there. Share price is looking very good. Thank you very much for submitting that, James. If you know of a stock with potential, please submit it. And it gives it the air of, you know, promotion, the air of exposure. I wouldn't say promotion, because I always say do your own research on every stock. But some companies, all they need is a bit of exposure, and you start to see something happening. So if you know of a company that's you think, you know, is underexposed, or people don't know anything about, and you think it has good fundamentals, let me know, and I'll let other people know. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.